This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Juneteenth became a national holiday in 2021, but Simone Farr, chef owner of the James Beard Award-nominated bakery La Patisserie Choquette in South St. Louis, has been offering eager patrons a special Juneteenth menu since 2018. Items on that menu have changed over the years, and this Juneteenth is no different. Something else that's signature Simone is stories that go along with just about everything she concocts. So to whet our appetites and provide some cultural backstory to some of the items on offer this weekend at Choquette, we have Simone herself. Simone, welcome to St. Louis on the Air once again.
Thank you.
So tell me how it is you started this tradition. I mean, was it born out of something of a crazy idea?
So it was 2018 that we decided to start actually offering items to the public, but we talked about it prior to that. But I didn't think enough people really knew what Juneteenth was and wondered, are people going to show up for it? You know, has anybody heard of it outside of the South? I'm from Louisiana, where there were sparse Juneteenth celebrations, but it wasn't a widely celebrated holiday. So 2018 rolled around and I said, you know what, let's just do it, because if people don't know about it, then how will they unless we introduce it? But St. Louis was already doing things for Juneteenth, but there wasn't a food-centered holiday event yet.
Mm-hmm. What were those first years like, Simone?
It was interesting. It was really fun because we had more children involved in it. Mm-hmm. We had a school come and the kids sat down and they had so many questions and we talked about food and fed them. And I remember there was one incident where a little girl, she raised her hand and I said, oh, what is it? And she was cutest little thing, blonde hair, blue eyed. And she goes, you know, my grandma was a slave.
Oh,
and
wow.
I said, oh, was she? Mm-hmm. And she goes, she was. And I said, oh, well, that is very interesting. You'll have to tell us all about that. And the poor teacher, she goes, you know, we've been talking about Juneteenth and slavery and foods. And I think maybe somewhere along the lines, we got things crossed, our wires crossed. But I said, maybe not. Mm-hmm. Maybe you didn't, because it's a holiday that should be celebrated by everyone. Mm-hmm. And who knows, you know, her ancestors, who could have been in her, you know, her lineage line. So
right.
Let's pay homage to her grandma.
Mm-hmm. We'd like to invite you to join this conversation, too. How will you be celebrating Juneteenth this year? Do you recognize the day as an annual tradition or with an annual tradition? Or do you have certain foods? Let us know by giving us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also email us at talk@stlpr.org. So starting with children, I think, is an interesting place for there to be a beginning. There were changes, obviously, over time. What were some of those changes, and why did you decide to take a different approach?
The changes came about because I wanted things to stay fresh, and I wanted to reach a broader audience and really speak, like, go beyond the initial story. Typically when you hear about Juneteenth, there's a story, you know, about, you know, Granger standing on this balcony in Texas and telling the enslaved people as well as the white people of Galveston, you know, these people are free, let them go. And I thought, you know, we've got to move past that story and focus on the celebration of Juneteenth. Like, what happened to those people afterwards? What happened to the spirit of those people? How did they move forward? Because while Juneteenth, the day of June 19th, is very interesting, I find it far more fascinating the days after Juneteenth. Like, what must that have been like to wake up on June 20th, mm-hmm. knowing that you were free, you were your own person? Or June 21st, when people set out to go and look for family members. So we made changes based on the story of the foods that they traveled with and that they took off of the plantations and onto the roads with them.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the first items that you offered in maybe the first, you know, 3 to 4 years?
So we, of course, did everything red velvet, everything imaginable for red velvet,
okay.
Right? Because it's the first thing that pops into my mind, because for Juneteenth, it's tradition to have foods that are red mm-hmm. in color, whether it be drinks or foods, to represent joy and resilience. And we offered a hibiscus tea, which made perfect sense because the flower is gorgeous. The red variety is gorgeous. But hibiscus was also used so greatly, whether it be medicinally or as a drink within the African American Southern culture.
The way that attendance of this event, and to make sure that people are not misunderstanding, this is not a ticketed sort of thing. This has to do with people coming to the bakery, picking up items that they've pre-ordered, and then also enjoying what is there in the bakery at the day of, whether it is Juneteenth itself or sometime afterward. How has the clientele changed? Who comes to these events now? And what does that tell you about the significance of what you're doing?
Originally, it was children, it was schools who were interested in educating their students. And then we started to see more adults coming in, people who had never been into the shop before, people who had heard of Juneteenth for the first time and they had questions, or people who simply had an appreciation for Southern foods. When we started to add more items to the menu, we offered a collection box of Juneteenth items that had anything from crawfish pies to sweet potato pone to banana pudding. And then we said, okay, there's no way for us to satisfy everyone's appetite mm-hmm. inside of this one collection box. So what we're going to do is get rid of the box and expand on the stories of the food, focus on that, and then allow people to choose what they want to learn about or to celebrate with, what they want to take home, what they want to enjoy. Because there are so many different ways to celebrate Juneteenth, so many different foods that people are familiar with eating throughout their own celebrations, their lives, or foods that are new to them. And we simply wanted to be able to introduce more stories of the people who either created, ate those foods, tweaked those foods, and mm-hmm. turned them into what they've evolved into today.
Yeah. People, I'm sure, are waiting to hear about some of the items. So this year, there are a number of items that are different on the menu than when I compared them to last year's. Simone, tell us about one of the new items for this year that you're especially excited about.
One of the new items. So I will say that it is a newer item. We did offer it last year. However, it wasn't terribly popular. It was such a niche item, and that would be the sweet potato pone.
Okay.
Because I think people in the Midwest, they hear sweet potato and they go, oh, sweet potato, I'm a pumpkin person. And, you know, that's fine. But sweet potato has such a rich flavor profile, depending on what type of sweet potatoes you're using. And the stories that come out of this pone recipe, I'm like, the history of it, the story makes it even better. And so I grew up in New Orleans eating sweet potato pone. I assumed that everybody was eating sweet potato pone. And I moved to the Midwest and I talked to people who live here who are from New Orleans, and they were not eating sweet potato pone growing up. So I called my mother and I was like, what's up with this? And she goes, oh yeah, girl. No, my grandmother, she's the one who taught me how to make that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, she did? Well, where did she learn? Oh, I guess she learned it from her mama, and she learned it from her mama and her mama. But as I talk to people outside of Louisiana who also ate pone, they weren't using sweet potato. Mm-hmm. So then I was very curious, well, what are you using? They use cassava, which we didn't have in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And so then that opened the door for the discussion of, for me, where my great-grandmother had gotten it from and our journey to Louisiana mm-hmm. through that recipe.
Simone, for those who are unfamiliar, what is a pone?
Ah, so glad you asked. So pone is believed to be a native word. It means the essence of the word is baked, but sometimes it's referred to as bread. Mm-hmm. And so it has roots in the native culture. However, you will find it in Trinidad, in Guyana. And so when they have their own, though, they use a cassava, they use coconut, and it is believed that that recipe was sort of adapted over time and had been taught to them in the Caribbean by a native mm-hmm. person. And so it is made with either pumpkin or sweet potato. Some have used corn or cassava with coconut milk, and it's baked in a dish with grated potato and mashed potato. And it's delicious. It's seasoned with cinnamon and nutmeg, and it's just so good.
Mm-hmm. And it is sold out online from what I saw.
It is. And this is the first year that it's sold out. And I am convinced that it's because I don't think it's enough in 2025 to simply make good food. Mm-hmm. You can get good food in a lot of places. I think people are truly hungry now to know not just the ingredients that they're putting in their bodies, who's making it and where did this come from? And I think the stories of it really helped people to kind of go, okay, I must try this.
Mm-hmm. That's a great spot for us to take a break. I'd also like to invite you to the conversation. How will you celebrate Juneteenth this year? Do you recognize the day with an annual tradition or certain foods? Let us know by giving us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Simone Farr, chef owner of the James Beard-nominated bakery La Pâtisserie Choquette in South St. Louis. This weekend, Choquette will continue its tradition of offering a selection of items dedicated to celebrating Juneteenth. And we're discussing this year's edition, which includes menu choices with distinct cultural histories. Before the break, Simone, you talked about people's hunger for stories. And one of the stories that you're telling this year has to do with influences from the Gullah Geechee culture. Why is that the case? And I think there's a personal story that's connected to that, right?
Yes. So my hope, my wish is to tell stories of the food and the people who made them and change the menu, have the menu evolve. And I am big into genealogy and have been tracing my own family tree for many, many years. I received a message from a woman in Guyana who said, hey, I think we're cousins. The DNA test says that we are cousins. And I'm just wondering how that is because we don't have any family in the United States. And she left her phone number. So I call her and she's got the thickest accent. And we start trying to figure out how we're connected. And I'm like, I've never heard anyone who speaks like that before. There's nobody in our family who, you know, has been in your country. And so she'd been tracing her own tree for many years. And She took my DNA test, my mother's, my son's, and she compared it to her matches and her family's matches, and she goes, I think I have it. A couple of siblings who had come out of West Africa and had been separated, one ending up in Barbados, the other going over to either North or South Carolina. And we said, oh, wow. And we were like, we won't know their names more than likely, but this is where the DNA is leading us. And I said, well, okay. Well, she sees a post sometime after that from Shuket on Facebook, and she calls me and goes, what does she make in porn? What you know about porn? I'm like, what? And she goes, you make a sweet potato porn. What kind of porn is that? You got porn in America? And I was like, oh, yes, we have porn. Like, you have porn? And she goes, we got porn. So she's asking where I'd gotten my recipe from. I asked to see her recipe. She wanted to see my recipe. And she's like, this is the connection. And I said, oh, well, let me look into this. And then seeing it, a light bulb went off in my head, because I had seen my family through the lens of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Africa, not, the Carolinas. Mm-hmm. And so then researching where my grandmother's and my great-grandmother's family had come from, and they were from that Gullah community, mm-hmm. where they would have learned this pone recipe and been able to bring it with them to Mississippi and into Louisiana and preserve it through us. Mm-hmm. And she was still making her version with cassava and coconut. And that was our connection, was literally through these recipes. And I don't think that if I had started serving it at the shop, I would still be looking for that connection, mm-hmm. because she never would have seen that post.
Yeah. There's another item that you talked with me about earlier this week, and you weren't quite sure whether you were going to go through with this particular recipe, and it's one for a rice pudding. Mm. This also has that connection to the Gullah Geechee community, yes. people. Tell us about this dish.
So I love rice pudding without raisins.
Without raisins.
There are two types of people in the world.
Right, right.
And I am a no raisin rice pudding girl. So rice is very important in the African-American community. And I don't think that people quite realize how much rice is consumed by African-Americans, not realizing that the rice first produced in this country was done so by enslaved Africans who had been brought over specifically for their skill of rice cultivation. And in South Carolina, there is a company that is owned by Marion and Francis Chalmers. They own a company called, get this right, Rawlins Raw Grains. Mm-hmm. And they are cultivating this Carolina gold rice that had been extinct for a long time. They worked with Anson Mills to be able to grow this on their property, and it had not been cultivated for at least 100 years. Mm-hmm. And being able to find an African-American rice farmer was very important to me to be able to make this recipe. I could use any rice. I've eaten a million rice puddings. Mm-hmm. I've used Uncle Ben's.
Yeah.
I mean, I've used it all. Yeah. But this rice was so special because doing my research, I had found my own ancestors working on rice plantations in the Carolinas, and I thought, this is an important part of the story. I have got to get my hands on this rice and bring it to St. Louis and be able to use it. And then I thought, is rice pudding really mm-hmm. the dish that I want to show the city with this wonderful rice? And I thought, well, yes, because, I could do a red rice. I could do jambalaya or, dirty rice or whatever. All of those dishes are wonderful. But what was I eating? Like, what is a dish that really is going to hug your soul? Mm-hmm. And those others might. But rice pudding, it really stays with you.
Right, right. So the event this year is happening on Saturday, June 21st. How early should people get there if they actually want to get something to eat?
Well, I mean, I don't want people to think that they have to line up the day before. I mean, these are not Beyoncé tickets they're trying to get. But we open at 9, and the reality is that we bake once a day. Mm-hmm. And so anything that we have at 9 o'clock is what we're going to have for the day. Mm-hmm. And so we did take pre-orders. Pre-orders ended, which is why you see everything is sold out.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But those items are still listed on the menu because they will be available on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And so I say, you know, if you are an eager eater like me, the earlier you arrive, the better.
Simone Farr is chef owner of La Patisserie Choquette in St. Louis's South St. Louis neighborhood. Simone, thank you so much for making time to talk with us today and for whetting our appetites.
This episode was produced by Elaine Chaw.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.